So it's very hard to move away from breaking family traditions and beliefs that you grew up with. And that's what I specialize in, is bringing awareness to sabotaging beliefs that are based on upbringing, that are based on what we call introjects. Introjects means things you've swallowed from society, from your family, from traditions, from ancestors, yeah? And I'm not saying they're bad things to swallow. We never criticize these beliefs. We actually bring the client to awareness in feeling how they're using that belief to manipulate their situation.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. My guest today is someone I have known a very long time. Dr. Amit Agarwal is a naturopathic doctor, and I studied with him here in Toronto, Canada, and he has since gone on to do really incredible things. Dr. Agarwal has a practice in Nairobi, Kenya, where he works with people under the discipline of transformational psychology, where he really helps people to break free of the limiting beliefs that are holding them back from the work that they can do in this world. In fact, this podcast turned into a live breakthrough moment for me simply by having Amit ask me just the right question at just the right time. We got into limiting beliefs and in particular digressed into a conversation where we looked at how our legacy, the beliefs, those beliefs that we have with respect to our parents and not wanting to disappoint them and our families of origin are often the core beliefs and the narrative that keep us from living the life that we want to live on our own ideal terms. Amit is an entrepreneur by choice, by alignment with his purpose. He has an incredible story to share and so much wisdom to drop. It is my pleasure to welcome my friend, Dr. Amit Agarwal. Dr. Amit Agarwal, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Well, we've been chatting just before we turned on the record button, and finally I was like, okay, we just have to start recording because we're going to do the whole podcast by accident if we don't jump in here. I mean, you and I went to school together, and that feels like a really long time ago. And then since that time, you've been doing incredible work in Africa. Can you give people a little bit of a background in terms of who you are and the journey that's gotten you right up to today?
Oh God. Okay. It feels like yesterday, actually, we were hanging out at—
Doesn't it?
In Toronto. Yeah. And then you really inspired me to do the mobile clinics and go for my mobile clinics and stuff like that. So I left Toronto. I finished naturopathic college and Gestalt psychotherapy school. Then worked in Vancouver, then headed over to Africa, did mobile clinics for poor communities in the north of Kenya. And that's where I was supervising naturopaths from around the world. We were going in the bush, camping with lions, treating communities, hiding from elephants. It was quite magic, actually. And then I started coaching students on emotional transformation. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because I guess we're taught a lot of naturopathic principles. And the emotional part is sometimes lacking in people's lives. And because of my background in psychotherapy and family constellation therapy and EMDR and all these things, I found it really useful to, I guess, coach volunteers and students on healing their emotions and belief systems. And I do that a lot with my patients now in Nairobi. So I'm practicing privately in Nairobi. I put a hold on the mobile clinics because of funding. And strangely, I have somebody from Geneva now at a conference I'm going to attend. She's come to Kenya now to help me restart my mobile clinic. So we'll talk about that at the end of this interview.
I love it. Okay, so what brought you back to Kenya? Because that's a totally different life than staying here in Toronto.
I think it's the winter that brought me back, to be honest.
I know nothing about those Canadian winters. Okay, that's fair.
I was born in Nanyuki. It's a little town by the equator in Kenya. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do community work. I could feel it in my blood. It's I love hanging out with the Samburu people. I was made for the bush, I believe. So it was in my blood. It was like what we say a dudu in the brain here in Kenya, an insect in the brain, just bugging you. And I started the charity, a registered charity in Canada. After practicing Vancouver, it was time. I could feel it. So I left everything and just came. I just came to start mobile clinics. And my family is here, my parents and stuff like that. So just came to be with them, spend time with them, and explore the bush.
Well, and I will say to people, literally, I got a message before we started to record this from my team. And they're like, Amit is in from the bush. You can start the interview. And I was like, I've never had that message before we jumped into a podcast. Share with us what that experience was like in terms of leaving Canada and going back to Kenya and starting a mobile practice. Because I think a lot of people, they sit back and they're like, oh, man, I would love the opportunity to go do charitable work in a developing country, or, you know, move to a developing country and do this really meaningful work. And then that forever remains a conversation in their own mind, because there really is a jump between, oh, I would love to do that someday. And there's actual steps that need to be taken in order to make that happen. Some of those are political steps. Some of those are social steps. Like, it is not, it's not an easy thing to do just because the need is there. What did that journey look like for you?
It's emotionally exhausting. It's a burnout road. I'll warn people. But so first of
all, they're all so inspired now.
Okay. So there's pluses and minuses. Well, first of all,
nice reframe.
First of all, it took me 2 years to get charity status in Canada, because first CRA initially would not give charity status to a holistic medicine NGO. They were like, we don't believe in this medicine kind of thing in those days. Yeah.
Right.
And then I finally convinced them, and they were very kind. They said, okay, you're doing good work, and just make it medical, quote unquote, right? So I got approval. Not sure if I needed it or not, to be honest, and headed back to Kenya. The good thing is I have family here. So in a way, I had some kind of financial security, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I didn't even own a laptop, I think. I should go to an internet cafe with super slow speed, you know, just to save money and stuff, and just write down proposals, write down stuff, website. I don't know. It was crazy. And then one day I met this guy who worked for an NGO, and we became friends. And he was like, dude, I'm going to this certain village. You have this dream of doing mobile clinics. I was volunteering in a garage, just helping repair cars and whatnot. Anyways, he's like, jump in the back of my pickup. Let's go. And literally, and I've written this story on my website, my first mobile clinic experience. I took a bunch of remedies with me, an apple, a banana, and a sandwich or something, jumped in the back of this thing, went out in the complete bush with these guys, and they were doing some community work. I went, there was a little classroom there. I set up shop, and it's like free medicines, right? And the whole community arrived, right? And it was just bizarre. And the thing is, because it was free medicine, people were just coming and they were not sick and they were asking for medicine for nothing. And there I learned that my first lesson, maybe charge like 2 cents or 5 cents for remedies. Of course, if they cannot pay that, then you don't. But just to put some sense of respect for the medicine and also give a sense of responsibility back to the person getting the medicine. So I did that for a couple of years, but it was tough because now how do you make money from this, right? People judge you for earning money from a charity, number one. I would charge students to come on medical brigades. So I would supervise 4 students at a time. So they would be supervised in learning homeopathy, and I would give emotional counseling and coaching to them. And they would pay a fee for my supervision. That stressed me out, to be honest, right? Because you have to save costs for the foundation, and the students are paying you, and just like, okay, what's a good amount? What's an appropriate amount? How do you live when there's no students coming and there's no fundraising? So it was stressful. I had to balance that with private practice. And I didn't like taking money from students, to be honest. It was actually an emotional roller coaster for me personally. I know a lot of organizations do it really well. People pay a nice fee and they go. And I fully support that. it was, I don't know, something just didn't feel very clean for me for that. Me personally, I'm not judging the other ones because I want to do it the same way the other ones are doing it. But there's something funny there for me. Anyways, I did that for a couple of years, and then my mom was passing away from cancer, so I just stopped all that, took care of her for a while until she passed on. So I put a stop on the mobile, and I started private practice just because of funding issues, right? And also because it was politically unsafe at one point for students to come down. And now, strangely, this year, without me asking for anything, people are sending me requests to send funding to me. So I think it's time for the mobile clinics to start again. I've got this lady from Geneva. She's around this week. We're going out into the bush to do some mobile clinics. I just took her to a herbalist right now. So that's why we pushed this interview a bit late. And let's see what happens, because I'd love to invite students to come down, gain supervision, share their knowledge as well, and get a full-on experience in Africa.
Well, Africa is a place that certainly for me has been somewhere I have gone, and every time I'm there, experience a deep transformational shift in terms of who I am. And I'm excited for you, because I think that, and we were talking about this before, I think there's a whole bunch of energy coming into and coming to fruition for you in terms of being able to do really great work. And I love what you touched on there, because I think this is really real for people. And that's this idea that somehow accepting payment and compensation for deep heart-centered work is really difficult. And the challenge I see in our profession as naturopathic doctors, but in general, because we have an audience of really heart-centered people, is reconciling those two pieces. And I think your experience speaks to the fact that if we don't have a plan for financial sustainability, and if we don't actually work through some of the limiting beliefs around what it means to accept payment for really meaningful work, then it's really hard to continue to do that work long-term. And I love that your story actually espouses that idea, because it's a topic I really enjoy talking about.
It's exhausting running a charity without proper compensation, yeah, number one. And Africa is a very expensive place to live. I mean, there's so much corruption here. The cost of living is as high as Canada or Europe, if not more. There's no retirement fund or RSPs or whatever you call it here. Healthcare, private healthcare is expensive. You're paying about, I don't know, $10,000 to send a little kid to kindergarten in a decent school.
Wow.
So people have a misconception. Of course, you can live poorly, but it's no one wants to live that way. Everyone's aspiring to have a comfortable life, right? And people judge people running charities and say, okay, you shouldn't live that way. You should live poorly. But that's very stressful, especially in Africa, because you have no rights when you don't have some sort of means, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a balance. I just want to remind people about that. If you're looking to do this work, you know, I mean, this is a lesson to myself as well. Treat yourself well, right? Because you can give more that way. You can have a more long-term project that way. I mean, don't be greedy. Be reasonable. But don't think you have to starve doing this. And I think I need to say it myself in the mirror a couple of times too.
Right. And those organizations that, you know, organizations publish these reports and they say, listen, like, you know, less than 10% of your donation goes towards admin. That's usually because they have a massive benefactor who's actually helping to support and underwrite the organization, or they've diversified and created so many innovative revenue streams that they can keep that administrative burden a little bit lower. So, I think this is a really important conversation as people are exploring this idea of, you know, I want to go and I want to contribute, and you need to build out your model of contribution in a sustainable and scalable way. One thing I want to jump into and meet, because, I mean, you've got this vision for these mobile clinics, which is incredible, and you were doing that work, but you also have a real personal passion in terms of your private practice. You're a gestalt psychotherapist, you're a naturopathic doctor, and emotional transformation is something that I know you are highly skilled at and is a huge part of your practice. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like.
Gosh, okay. When somebody walks into my clinic, I listen to their story. And then even if they're coming in for a physical reason or an emotional reason, and in their story, you can see a sort of compensation in their language. or they're avoiding saying something, and I can feel that right away. And I stop them in their tracks right there and then, and I say that sentence you just said again, say it again. I get them to repeat it until they realize what they're saying, and suddenly they're like, wow, this is my narrative. Yeah. And when they come out of narrative, they get a moment of self-awareness and how they've been holding on to a narrative that's making them sick. And in that moment of awareness, suddenly they're introduced with choice of a different language, a different narrative, self-forgiveness, letting go of a concept in their mind that was traumatizing them, a blame towards another person. Yeah, there's a moment of just freedom. Yeah, freedom from words. And I don't know what to call it, a choice of a new experience with reality. And I support them in that moment of awareness. I make contact with them in that what I call vulnerability. And I support them to see me, feel themselves, breathe, take a deep breath, and reprogram themselves, readjust their sense of self, reality. And I also encourage them to say their words in a healthier way, in a new way that makes them feel more powerful, in control, in charge of their lives, more clear about themselves, about the situation. And that's like a big aha moment for people, right? And suddenly they're free, they have more energy for themselves, they're less angry, their body heals, their ulcers heal. A lot of different things happen for people when they go through an emotional shift like that.
I want to unpack that a little bit more, because I find often this idea of the emotional connection between illness and an individual is so intuitive to us as practitioners. But when you really start to bridge that conversation with patients, they have to be in the right time and place for them to really want to go there and unlock that. What types of narratives, just so people maybe can have these aha moments for themselves, what types of narratives do you see people engaging in that are sort of, that are traditionally clustered with illness? Like, what types of thought patterns are you like, oh no, when I see that thought pattern, I know there's something behind it, or there's something that's going to manifest for this person. Have you seen those types of patterns?
It's hard to pinpoint an exact narrative at the same time. And I pinpointed and connected to an exact pathology. I'm not sure about that yet. Yeah. I'm lucky and blessed that a lot of people come to me for mental healing, yeah, anxiety, depression, trauma, relationship issues, etc. Some of the narratives are blame. A lot of the narratives actually that walk into my clinic are blaming the other person. He did this to me, all that. And then I get them to a point to say, okay, yes, repeat that. He did this. He did this. And then I ask them to say, I took this on. I stayed in the relationship. I was patient enough, or I believed I was meant to remain in a relationship because of my family's beliefs or my mom's beliefs of tolerating abuse or something like that, you know. Then they get their awareness of, oh, wow, I have a choice in this as well. And they let go of the energy of blame suddenly. And they're like, I actually have the freedom to decide whether to leave this relationship or not. So blame is one. Using the word and instead of but, that's a language thing we use in Gestalt, in NLP, in different coaching techniques. The people say, you know, I want to do this, but I'm stuck.
Right.
When we use this, the word like, I want to do this and I'm stuck, they get awareness of like, okay, and I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. Something about the stuckness now, rather than the stuckness being like a state of victimhood. If you want to do something and you use the word and I'm stuck, you see your responsibility in getting out of stuckness, rather than using stuck as an excuse not to do what you want to do.
Well, I want to come back to more words like this, because I kind of love these themes. But I will say, the start of 2019, I did an emotional detox. And one of the things I detoxed and said no to in my life, so whether it was mastermind groups or other investments I'd made, I just will no longer surround myself with clusters of people whose language is yeah, but. Like I'm done. The yeah, butters are, I am evolving past yeah, butters. So even in my practice, when people are like, I know, but I'm like, whoa, time out. We have to unpack this. Otherwise this isn't going to work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's exhausting. It's exhausting for the patient as well. And I bring them to awareness of the amount of exhaustion they're actually living with without knowing it, or they're tolerating. People are tolerating exhaustion, you know, with these languages. And when they get clarity about the language and the narrative they've been using, they realize that, gosh, I've been tolerating this exhaustion and I can let it go now.
Right. I feel like we push ourselves to this place of exhaustion, almost like we just don't deserve to have it all.
The reason why, and I was just going to actually go into that, sometimes it's out of loyalty to a belief system of family or your parents. Mm. So, you know, my parents told me this was the right way. And so it's very hard to move away from breaking family traditions and beliefs that you grew up with. And that's what I specialize in, is bringing awareness to sabotaging beliefs that are based on upbringing, that are based on what we call introjects. Introjects means things you've swallowed from society, from your family, from traditions, from ancestors, yeah? And I'm not saying they're bad things to swallow. We never criticize these beliefs. We actually bring the client to awareness in feeling how they're using that belief to manipulate their situation, yeah, to operate their operating system, their software. And that awareness, bring them to awareness of how they're using this belief to walk their path or determine their consequences, is so exhausting. And they're carrying this belief with them. And I give them permission to experiment with an alternate, or letting go of this belief temporarily, so they don't feel threatened by letting go of a belief system. So temporarily letting go of a belief system and saying, okay, how are you without this? You know, are you still your mother's daughter or son, or your father's daughter and son without this belief and loyalty? They're like, yes, great. Do you still love your parents? Yes. Is this belief that important for you to belong to your family? And that's where they start questioning that belief. You know, a lot of people hang on to a belief because they need to belong to the family that they came from. That moment of questioning is a beautiful moment of awareness, because people there have the permission to let go of the belief and still feel they can belong and receive the love from their family and live in an empowered way. So they don't have to remain small for the sake of the family tradition or history. And then they're more successful. Then they're more happy. Then they choose better relationships. Then they leave abusive situations. A lot of things happen in that moment of aha.
This is sort of groundbreaking. I was having this, well, you're like, no, it's not. I do this every day. I was having this conversation with another girlfriend, and we're both turning 40 this year. And I said, I've become aware, as I've really started to identify sort of the intentions for the next decade and what I really want this transition to represent for me, is I was finding I was still having these tentacles to the belief system of my family of origin. My parents are divorced, but they each have respective belief systems. And she was commenting on the exact same thing. And she, you know, it was really interesting. We were finding that, and we both had this conversation around the transition from sort of that family of origin piece, regardless of what that looks like, into a new marriage and a new relationship and the opportunity to create like a new mission statement around these things. That was really hard and kind of felt like a work in progress. And really, till you put language to it right now, I kind of felt like no one ever talked about that piece. I mean, maybe if I had stuck to pre-marriage therapy, like we were supposed to, but didn't, because everyone knows everything at that phase of life, we would have gone there. But yeah, I kind of want to unpack this, because I feel like this is a bit of a, I think this affects more than just she and I.
No, absolutely. Okay, so try this experiment right now, Megan, yeah?
Okay, I'm in.
You don't have to tell everyone what that entanglement was, or with your family.
Sure.
Just notice it and say out loud, I want to connect. I need to connect. I need to remain connected to you. Try that sentence. I need to remain connected to you.
I need to remain connected to you.
Yeah, say it alongside with awareness of that good move, that movement. Just feel it. I'm sensing something on this end. Okay. Repeat now again. What's happened right there? That feeling right there. What's that feeling right now?
It's slightly content.
Good. And use this contentment to know that you're not disconnected.
Awesome.
Beautiful. Right. Nice. That's called permission now.
Ah.
Do you feel that?
I do. I've never had a live therapy session, but I'm kind of liking where we're going with this.
Yeah, so this is fun stuff. This is fun stuff. And this type of movement is what changes people's lives, yeah?
These types of things always transform people's lives. You know, I feel like people, when they're, you know, we're talking about going away for a weekend, having these transformational weekends, people want to know all the stuff they get. And usually what I find and what I try to explain to people is, you reach a point in life where it's never the whole weekend package you need. It's like one knowledge bomb and one interaction and one strategically asked question. It's going to totally change your life. So just surrender to the experiences that are given to you, because that's going to happen. And I've had that happen so many times when I've interviewed guests on my podcast, that I struggle with the fact that it feels moderately selfish. But I feel like that's a really, what a really powerful tool you just gave everybody.
Thank you. Please use it and also notice that this unpacking of a belief system, what mm-hmm. just happened for you, mm-hmm. yeah, gives permission to all your cells now with a new intelligence to begin this journey of change. So exactly that feeling you're getting right there, right? So I kind of, how I feel it is I get tingles in my skin and I know something's moving on the other end of the internet or the world. So that awareness gives, it's like the cells open up to receiving new information in a different way. So they're operating, how do I say it? Okay, I'm going to explain this differently, yeah? Prior to this intervention, prior to the emotional change, your cells, your intelligence, your consciousness was operating in a certain way, let's say with a frown on its face, for example, yeah, based on old belief. And that frown on its face is the microcosm, which determines your entire macrocosm. So every part of you was actually entangled with that frown, with that way of living in entanglement. And now that, yeah, does that make sense?
Totally, yeah? Makes sense, yep.
And now that you gave yourself permission to let go of that, you're not frowning anymore, or parts of your cell is not with the same frown. Of course, you have other frowns from previous other beliefs. We're not going to go into all of them today. That's impossible. That lack of frown, though, yeah, the main frown, reprograms your entire cellular structure, your entire belief system, your entire being. So now suddenly the way you approach life has shifted. So the way you're going to process information, yeah, because your subconscious has changed, the way you're going to process information consciously and subconsciously is going to be completely different. So you'll be more available to your lover or to your love life or to business or to enjoyment in life. Yeah, without even actually thinking it, it's going to come automatically now because there's no sabotage going on at a cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
And this growth of intelligence is like, it builds on itself. So it escalates because now you're going to do things differently. So you'll get a different type of aha moment later on based on a new experience you'll invite in your life, and it'll escalate into more and more transformation, and you just become super aware and content.
Yeah, I feel that, not necessarily from that moment 2 minutes ago, but the decision this year to take yeah but people out of my world was a really thick layer on the onion, because it just meant that I no longer surrounded myself with a narrative that my subconscious could hang on to. Because the yeah, but is always a rational thought that's really easy to justify. And so totally eliminating that has made me open to these types of conversations where you get these really rapid transformations, usually by the nature of like a single question. You know, I love this. And I agree with you that once you start to peel off a layer, those layers will often peel really quickly. Absolutely. Do you have, I know you've got a variety of different healing modalities that you will pull into the transformational work that you do with people. Do you have some favorite remedies for emotional healing or emotional healing techniques that you like to use?
Okay. Well, I use intuition a lot. So I feel things. And I think everyone can build on their intuition through meditation, through self-awareness, through a coaching program. If they go through a self-growth program, I went through Gestalt psychotherapy. It's not the easiest thing to go through, to be honest. It can be quite traumatizing for some people. I was very traumatized and it took me years to heal from the trauma. At the same time, it was very effective and very transformational for me. So it's a plus and minus. Depending on which school you go to and how they support you and how they take care of the group, yeah, different things can happen. I do family constellation therapy. That's working with ancestral trauma loyalties, like we talked about today. So your loyalty to your parents and so I used my knowledge in constellations to understand that you needed to remain connected. Then I used Gestalt in a way to ask you to exaggerate the request for connection and then suddenly become aware that you're actually okay and this need for connection, it was a need and yet the connection was there already. And I use EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. I think that's what it stands for. That's a lot for trauma work. So somebody comes in for trauma and I don't know how to, like, somebody comes in from trauma and I ask them to remain with the memory and notice what negative beliefs they have about themselves and the feelings that come up related to the trauma. And then I ask them to follow my fingers left and right or tap on certain points in their body. I mean, I'm simplifying it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then I notice what change they're going through. And then I support their awareness of the change and say, okay, notice how you're feeling right now. and notice how maybe your legs are loosening up or your pelvis is letting go. Or I don't try and be very suggestive. You don't want to be suggestive in therapy, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I just say, notice what's happening. Do you feel your legs? Or is your breath, what do you notice about your breath? And then they give you feedback and they're like, and I'll say, great, feel that freedom now. Feel this permission, feel this new sense of you, different sense of you. Yeah. So I choose my words very carefully. So maybe a different sense of you rather than a new sense of you, because new is a bit suggestive, right? And it's pushing the person into a direction maybe they're not fully ready to do yet. Different, it is not a particular direction. So they allow themselves that change more easily. Homeopathy is fantastic for healing trauma and emotions. So I don't necessarily do constitutional. If somebody has come in and they've seen, an accident, or they went through a terrorist attack. So I've treated a lot of people who went through terrorist attacks, for example. I'll give them aconite. I'll give them Ignatia, especially if they've gone through financial stress or a breakup or a betrayal. Yeah. If they're withdrawn, give them natrium muriaticum, numb from, seeing a terrorist throw a grenade at a body and they just go into numbness. You give opium, for example. So there's remedies we can do to break that trauma, and then they're more workable. And as they're doing this, then I want to support the adrenal system and the body, and then I throw them into acupuncture or Bowen therapy, so the body starts healing together with the emotional work we're doing. And then I support the adrenal system, of course, with some herbs, and always healing leaky gut and liver. So I specialize a lot in healing the liver as well. I have an online course on that as well, on how to treat all this combined. And people really appreciate it, because they're healing the mind, they're getting body support, and they're treating the physiology how naturopathic doctors typically treat, yeah?
Right. And we just take it for granted that all these things are integrated. And I think there are very few people who have the opportunity to really get to do deep work, especially related to trauma, where that integration takes place the way that you're doing it. Really quickly, before we transition into the rapid fire segment of our podcast today, talk a little bit about the connection between the liver and mood and mental emotional health.
So I'll zip through leaky gut, liver, adrenal fatigue very quickly. Okay, so leaky gut, you have a stomach, you have intestines. Intestines are like a lining, like a tube, kept healthy by good bacteria and good food, right? Over time, with antibiotics, poor diet, etc., good bacteria get killed off, lining gets damaged, lining gets holes. We call it leaky gut. With leaky gut, toxins go into the bloodstream, cause inflammation everywhere, leading cause for asthma, eczema, arthritis. Chronic inflammation creates a cortisol imbalance. Cortisol imbalance suppresses melatonin, serotonin, dopamine, and GABA. Yeah, your brain chemicals responsible for anxiety, depression, emotional well-being. Inflammation then creates a lot of toxicity in the body. I call it autotoxicity. That goes to the liver. Liver takes a big hit, produces less bile in the intestines. So there's more gas, bloating, digestion, constipation, worsening of leaky gut. And worsening of the intestinal environment. As we know, a lot of serotonin is produced in the gut. So mental health is affected by gut health and liver health in that way. Liver is also the master controller of hormones in Chinese medicine. So with liver stagnation and toxicity, then we have a progesterone deficiency, estrogen dominance, testosterone imbalances, all these things happen, yeah? And that is directly connected to mood. For example, progesterone helps GABA work better in the brain. So people with low progesterone, their GABA is not so effective in their brain and they're more prone to anxiety. And all of this inflammation, yeah, is stress in the adrenal system to make cortisol. And so the adrenal glands get exhausted, go into cortisol imbalance, which suppresses the brain chemicals. And also thyroid function. So too much cortisol will suppress TSH and I think T4 to T3 conversion. So low thyroid symptoms, of course, relate to mental health as well. And that's the physical side of things, yeah? Now you combine that with emotional trauma and stress, yeah? That stimulates your adrenal system to go into fight or flight and to produce adrenaline. And then emotional memory, traumatic memories remain in your limbic brain and continue to exhaust your adrenal system, which is simultaneously being exhausted by a poor diet, high sugar diet, and inflammation. You get a double whammy on your adrenal system, and therefore your adrenal exhaustion comes up faster, cortisol imbalance comes up faster, brain chemicals go out of balance faster. So that's why we heal inflammation as well as healing trauma at the same time.
Boom. In like 3 seconds or less, you just took us like through an entire university degree. I love that. And it's so important. And you and I see this in the work that we do all the time. But I think sometimes it's really hard for people to understand the connectivity between what's happening in our brain and on an emotional level and the physiological ramifications. And then how those two things bump off of one another really into perpetuity until you interrupt the pattern.
I'm going to do a TED talk on that one day. I hope somebody invites me and I can do a TED talk on mental health.
Oh my gosh, you would have so much to share. At the end of the day, it really is all about your brain and what you do with it. It is the most amazing supercomputer that you have access to. And yet we spend so little time making sure that we are giving it the things it needs so that it can serve us on our mission-driven journey. We have questions that we always ask people when they're sitting in our office so we can get insight in terms of how well someone's brain is actually serving the work that they do. And we decided to take this knowledge and take this line of questioning and hand it off to you. We've created a quiz for you and you can find it at anthropologyperformancelabs.com/brain quiz, where we start to provide you with the insight of smarter questions with respect to how your brain is functioning on a daily basis. If you want to get your hands on these awesome nuggets of knowledge, head on over to anthropologyperformancelabs.com/brain quiz and get started today. Amit, this is a really great time for us to transition to the last part of the interview. And this is where I have a series of rapid fire questions for people to have a little bit more insight into who you are. So I call these our KPI questions, our key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe we also have them in how we live our lives. So are you ready?
Oh God, I'm nervous. Go for it.
There's no math. Don't worry. You got this. Okay. First question. Who is inspiring you right now?
Gosh, my first answer is nobody. And Bob Marley, because of my memories of having dreadlocks and being a good person. My father was a very hard worker. And I don't know, God's coming to mind because of love, unconditional love, and the ability to share love.
What's your audacious goal for the next year?
Lamborghini comes to mind, selling 1 million copies of my online course, selling 1 million copies of my book, and then doing my mobile clinics for free and just teaching integrated naturopathic medicine and homeopathy to all the communities in Kenya, eventually Africa, and transforming medicine in Africa into a more integrated way and reintroducing herbal medicine from communities that's been forgotten back into the medical system and rejuvenating herbal medicine knowledge from the communities and finding the best herbal medicines on Mount Kenya where I live.
I really think we need to have you thinking bigger.
Oh, really? Okay.
I know. You're like, what? No, I'm smiling here. I love it. I love the energy and enthusiasm with which you live your life and do your work. It's so great. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I'm always examining myself. I'm always processing sensation and emotions and transforming them into freedom and clarity. So I'm very consistent that way. Yeah, loving, working on self-love, forgiveness, and letting go. I'm also consistent with what? I'm not sure what else. Something about my mother. I don't know. Being connected to her. Being connected to my mother's spirit. Strange. I've never thought of it this way, but yeah, that's my authentic answer in this moment is almost like sharing my mother's love in my heart with myself and not thinking of about her loss, maybe. So remaining open to my mother's love and her heart and her energy in my life.
I love that. Amit, what do you do for fun or play?
Nothing yet because I'm burnt out and exhausted and thinking about my mobile phones. Yoga. And yeah. I used to love tennis. I threw my back in a bit. Going for walks in the forest. I love doing that. I'm trying to get into rock climbing. My muscles are not strong enough. But I'd love to leave private practice one day and just live in and just walk in the mountains for 2 years straight, not worrying about income or anything like that. And fun and play. I also love socializing. I love connecting with people's emotions and feelings. I'm scared that it might be therapy socially. I'm not sure. People feel very connected to me. And maybe sometimes I'm like, I'm operating as a therapist rather than me. It feels fun. And I'm aware, there's a fear in me that maybe it'll cause loneliness because no one really knows me inside because I'm always available to people's feelings.
Right. Which is a gift.
A gift
to be able to do that.
Curse for therapists, yeah.
Last question for you, Amit. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
We learn to become entrepreneurs. I became successful because I read books like The Success Principles of Jack Canfield. I worked on my belief systems. I listened to your podcast. I listened to other podcasts. I work on my website. I'm inspired. So it takes a lot of hard work, dedication. I don't want to use the word hard work because a lot of people and coaches will tell you hard work is a myth. And if that's your belief system, that it's what it's going to be. There's a drive. It is a drive. I mean, I used to do a lot of drugs and have fun in university and high school. I didn't care about money. I didn't care about success. I was just like, man, life is just about whatever, man, you know, tripping out and just having fun and socializing. And then reality hits you, right? And you say, gosh, you got to be successful. You got to make things work for yourself. And so something lit the fire underneath me. And I also want financial independence so that I can do my mobile clinics for free and enjoy my life at the same time. So I think a goal can make an entrepreneur out of you as well. And also training. So having a reason as well as the right training.
I feel like it all comes down to purpose. And Amit, I am deeply inspired by yours. Where can people go to learn more about your book and your online course and the really amazing thing that you are doing for communities in Kenya?
Health.drameet.com. So drameet.com. There, they can watch some of the videos for free. Please buy the online course. The more you buy, the more work, community work I can do, the more freedom I can have. It's CE approved for naturopathic doctors, dietitians, and nutritionists as well. I don't know, buy lots of books and send them to your communities. The way medicine is, you know, send them to Africa, whatever you want to do. That's where they can find out about everything. I'm in the midst of restarting my mobile clinics. So this lady's come from Geneva. So hopefully it'll take off really well. Yeah, you're welcome to visit me in Africa if everything's well.
Well, we're going to work towards making that happen. Amit, thank you so much for taking your time to be here. We'll hook everyone up with all of the things that you've got going on. And congratulations on all the amazing work that you are doing to change people's lives.
Thank you, Megan. My next goal, invite me to one of your transformational retreats and I'll be a coach with you.
Done. November, Toronto, the 21st. We will totally take you up on that. Amit, thank you so much for being here.
Big hug. Thank you, everyone.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.